We are here to go to the edge. And I've always lived on the edge. But sometimes I've fallen off the edge, flat on my face. But I don't want to stop living on the edge, right? I mean, that's our job as visionaries, whether we're an artistic visionary or a toolmaker visionary. We are here to live on the edge. It's just finding that way not to fall off.
Welcome back to another episode of the Making Magic Podcast. I'm Sean Jay, your host, and I'm a professional magician, speaker, and 3D designer. And this is all about inspiring conversations with the movers, the shakers, the visionaries, and the makers, the wizards behind the curtain that make the magic for you. Now, if this is your first time tuning into the show, thank you so much for doing so. It really does mean a lot because I put a lot of hard work into each and every episode. Whether you're listening to the sound of my voice on any one of the popular podcast apps, I hope that after listening to these interviews, you'll decide to drop a healthy review of the show and leave your comments. And we're always looking for feedback. And if you're watching here on YouTube, feel free to give it a thumbs up, like, comment, subscribe, and click that little notification bell to stay up to date when I release my next episode. I've got so much more to share with you guys, and I can't wait to take you on that journey. So with all of that said, let's learn a little bit more about our next guest. He's an Emmy Award-winning writer and producer for his nationally broadcast educational television shows, and he's produced hundreds of programs that have impacted and influenced millions over four decades. Currently, he runs the Love Coach Academy and hosts The Awakening World, a popular online series. And he's consistently worked with evolutionary new thought leaders such as Marianne Williamson, Michael Beckwith, Ram Dass, Tony Robbins, Marshall Rosenberg, and a host of others. So it is my absolute pleasure to introduce you to my next guest, Mr. Scott Katamas. Check it out. Hey, Scott, welcome to the Making Magic Podcast.
Good to be here, Sean. Wow, we flipped roles here, so this is kind of fun.
Yes, I'm usually on your show with the Global Peace Tribe, but now you're on my show, and I'm going to introduce my audience to you this time.
And I want people to know that Sean is our favorite magician. People always, when's Sean Jay coming back? When are we going to have Sean Jay again? We haven't seen Sean for a while. Audience loves him.
Thank you. And we can make that happen. We'll talk after this is over about when the next time Sean will be appearing on Scott's program, which I'm sure we'll be learning about also during this interview. So, Scott, to kick off this interview, what I always like to do by kicking this off is to ask my guest a story, to tell a story of the very first thing that they've ever created. And I've interviewed a lot of prop builders and creative artists in the past. You may not be a prop builder, but you are very creative in your own right, and you've created a number of things, I'm sure, business-wise over the years. So is there one that stands out that you can share with our audience here?
Yeah, well, I'll go with the first big one. I was born on Christmas Day, and I grew up with a Messiah complex. I literally thought it was up to me to save the world. And I kind of chilled out and realized it was up to all of us. But still, as a teenager, I was very like, got to change the world. And so I went to a very progressive high school where I became the king of the drama department. And my reality was, okay, Walt Disney probably has influenced the world more than anybody. And so I wanted to be the next Walt Disney. So, but I was only a teenager. So what could I do? I started a theater company with plays for teenagers, by teenagers, about teenagers. I started it when I was still in high school at age 16. I was an emancipated minor. I was living on my own. And by the time I was 21, we had 85 full-time employees. We had professional touring companies under equity contracts. traveling all over the country doing shows for kids on drugs and gangs and violence. A lot of our actors and actresses became famous, most famous one being Whoopi Goldberg. But a lot of our other actors and actresses got their own TV series, and you know, many of them have become character actors working for decades. And that's really the first thing that I built. I was the founder, president, dictator, benevolent dictator of that theater company. And it was definitely something that I built.
Wow, that's it takes a lot of drive to just go, okay, this is the idea, and I'm just going to take this thing all the way, 100%, never holding back. But that's how you are. I mean, I've seen you now. You're the way you stack your projects, and just it's just the rate and speed at which you go is pretty amazing.
Thank you.
So you. What was it?
I said it keeps me young.
It keeps you young. Yeah. No, I understand completely.
And you know, back in those theater company days, that's where I really learned set insane deadlines, because then it gets done. Otherwise, you can spend forever refining the book, refining the magic act, refining. And obviously, in magic, it's got to be perfect because it's a different thing. But I just really learned, like, just set crazy deadlines and do it. And the next thing you know, it gets done. And if you make sure you surround yourself with talented people who get along well, which I learned that pretty early on, I was lucky. My original people that I worked with, we all were good friends. And so it kind of just established, find good people that are talented, that get along well, create crazy deadlines, and magic happens. No pun.
Yeah. That's pretty much the formula to building any company, right? Mm-hmm. Just any business is surrounding yourself with the talented people that can pick up in areas that you are not good at. They surround yourself with these people, and then it works together as a whole. And the reason now, I don't know if you mentioned this, but what was the reason why you made that theater company, like the driving reason behind it?
I wanted to change the world. And, you know, I felt like the best way to do it is through media. And I didn't have the money to make movies or a television show. But what I could do is kind of, get people together and do theater. And so, again, it started when I was in high school. So we would create shows that we played in high school. And then I just thought, okay, these shows are playing well in my high school. Let's take them to other high schools. And then it just kept evolving. One of the big steps is that we created a camp at Jane Fonda's Ranch in Santa Barbara, which I ran for 11 years. And that's how, as we became no longer teenagers, we stayed connected to teenagers. And we did this for a very long time. By the time I was 21, as I said, I had 85 employees. I won my first Emmy Award at 23, because we would take these shows and play them to hundreds of high schools. And teenagers are a great audience, because you can't bullshit them. They'll let you know exactly how they feel.
Yes.
You either got them or you don't. And so what was great about that was, by playing so many schools with, again, very talented actors, we kept adjusting, okay, this didn't work, this works better. And it was we did a lot of improvisational work, dealing with the shows, dealing with the topics. And by the time we had played 20 or 30 high schools, the show was really tight, because we just kept changing it and changing it until it was really tight, 40-minute assembly.
Mm. So changing the world can manifest in many ways. There's many ways to change the world, but I agree that media, especially with young people, because younger people are more connected to media, whether it be social media, movies, TV, internet videos, it's all media.
Yeah. Well, music. I mean, is there a bigger influence in the world right now than Marvel, you know? I mean, it's just a huge, huge influence. And it's interesting that Disney bought Marvel, bought Star Wars, bought Pixar. So Disney, for a long time, has been really having an incredibly huge cultural impact on our values and, you know, what we believe.
Yes, Disney. Doesn't Disney own Apple, or Apple owns? It's like
no. Okay. No. They're separate companies. But Steve Jobs did have, before he died, a very close relationship with Bob Iger, and they where they did collaborate was Pixar. Pixar was a collaboration between Disney and Apple, and Disney bought Apple, eventually bought it out. But Iger, who really created the contemporary Disney, he was the genius behind buying Marvel, buying Pixar, buying Star Wars. His autobiography is a great autobiography. It's called The Ride of a Lifetime. And for people that are builders and are entrepreneurs, he's probably one of the most successful people in terms of what he's built. And his autobiography, I really enjoyed it. It's very, very, very good.
And the name of that one more time was?
The Ride of a Lifetime by Bob Iger, I-G-E-R, who started as a production assistant at ABC and worked his way all the way up to become the chairman of the board of Disney. And during his 14-year reign, it ended a couple of years ago, he retired. During those 14 years, that's when Disney went streaming and bought Star Wars, Marvel, Pixar, National Geographic, ABC, The Mouse That Roared.
The Mouse That Roared. Yeah, I thank you for clarifying. It was Pixar. I was like, I knew Apple was involved with Pixar, right. And Disney was too. So it was the Pixar connection. Got it.
And Pixar movies are the best. I mean, I love Marvel movies, but the Pixar movies are so good. They're really amazing.
Telling a story that's able to connect with everybody. It's like something, there's always something for everybody in their stories, where it doesn't matter who you are, or where you came from, you're able to connect either with the characters or the story, the main underlying story.
So a lot of heart. You know, there's always a lot of heart in Pixar movies.
Yes. Yes. And what, Scott, did you learn from making this theater company, like the biggest lesson that it taught you?
I would say that it taught me that teenagers are the best audience in the world, because they're still shaping their values. You can't bullshit them, because they are by nature rebelling against authority. So if you come across in an authoritarian way, they're going to flip you off. But if you can acknowledge their reality, and if you do it with humor and with music and with truth, and that's what we would do. We would weave teenage reality. We would present, almost every show would start by presenting how hard it was to be a teenager, how obnoxious adults can be, how obnoxious authoritarian figures can be. So that kind of pulled them to our side. Create characters that, you know, in our shows that they would care about. And then the characters would go through whatever trauma or difficulties or challenges that are honest and authentic in a teenager's life and be faced with difficult decisions. I'll give an example.
Sure.
We did a show on adolescent pregnancy prevention. And this was at a time that Nancy Reagan was pitching Just Say No.
Oh, boy.
Which is a joke. You know, just say no. It's a joke. Just say no to drugs. Just say no to alcohol. Just say no to having sex. That's what a teenager's job is to figure out their relationship to alcohol, to figure out their relationship to pot, to figure out their relationship to sex, right? So we were very controversial, because our shows on drugs were called Use and Abuse, acknowledging there's going to be use.
Wow, that's an interesting way of framing it.
Yeah. And then with the adolescent pregnancy show, we used a lot of humor. And one of the examples was, we showed what happened when the boy gets pregnant, right? What it's like for the guy when he gets pregnant. And Of course, at first, again, it's really funny, a boy who's now pregnant, and, you know, he's in the home for unwed fathers. pregnant unwed father is talking to another pregnant boy. And at first it's funny, but then again, you start getting into how scary it is to be 16 years old and to have a baby and not know how you're going to take care of it and all the things you have to give up, giving up sports, giving up, you know, all that. And it, again, it starts off funny. It got more and more progressively serious. And I can remember I'd watch the audience and they'd be laughing and then they'd start leaning forward as they'd start really catching what we were sharing with them.
That's really smart. So you're using just this really wild and crazy thing to start it off, to grip everybody, like, what the heck is that? And then you use that hook to teach the things that you were aiming to teach.
Exactly.
Because
it's the oldest trick in the book. I mean, to be honest, we picked it up from Charlie Chaplin. That's what Charlie Chaplin did. You know, he would start off with humor and get us laughing and get us relating to the little tramp or getting relating to, you know, and then he, in his later films, would then get progressively more serious, including The Great Dictator, which is one of the most incredible movies. Do you know the story of The Great Dictator?
I do not.
Okay, now let me educate your audience. Everybody, when you're done, go watch The Great Dictator. Chaplin started making it in 1936. It came out in 1939. He spent 3 years making it. He wrote it, he directed it, he produced it, he composed the music for it. And in the movie, it starts off humorous about the great dictator, whose name is Adenoid Hinkle, and obviously it's a total takeoff on Adolf Hitler. And at first he's seen as a buffoon and as, you know, this egomaniac who wants to own the world. And Chaplin plays Hinkle, Hitler basically, and he also plays a little Jewish tailor who happens to look exactly like Hinkle. And ends up being a whole crossover thing. But the movie starts off funny, but gets progressively more serious as we start really seeing Nazism and we start seeing what's happening to people. Mm. And we start the horror of it all. Mm. And the movie culminates with Charlie Chaplin, the greatest silent film star, speaking for the very first time.
Mm.
It was the very first time in Charlie Chaplin's history he speaks. And many people believe that his, including myself, that speech that he gives at the end of The Great Dictator is the greatest speech in the history of the movies. It's, if you Google it, just Google Great Dictator, Charlie Chaplin, greatest speech, you'll see plenty of options to watch it. And scholars, movie scholars, often say it is the greatest speech in the history of the movies, made by a silent film star talking for the first time. And Chaplin became a star around 1913, 1914. This came out in 1939. So it's 25 years after laughing at him just being silent. And he gives this extraordinary speech.
So yeah, it's kind of like the silent kid in class, the kid who never speaks, and all of a sudden he says something or he does this major talent and blows everybody away because nobody's expecting it.
Right, exactly.
So, okay, everybody check out the Great Dictator speech. We actually had a little bit playing. You could see a little sample of it while Scott was talking. The viewers were able to see this, but for those of you listening, that's what was going on. We'll hopefully include a link to that in the show notes. So check out The Great Dictator. So Scott, knowing what you know right now, after having this experience building this theater company and just being a wild and crazy entrepreneur with these ventures, is there anything that you would tell your younger self if you were to go back in time to prevent yourself from making any of the mistakes that you made along the way?
That's a great one. Honestly,
okay.
Exercise more and do less drugs.
What was the first one?
Exercise more and do less drugs. And I mean, I don't know if we're allowed to say this, but psychedelics were a big part of my awakening. They were definitely a big part. And I have no regrets over my introductory use of psychedelics because it helped me to wake up. But I did them too long, and definitely when I look back, if I had taken less drugs, and again, I never got into cocaine, I never got into pills.
Good.
I always did, you know, the spiritual drugs, pretty much mushrooms and LSD. It was wonderful, and it woke me up. But if instead of doing it 50 times, I wish I'd done it 10 times. And instead of smoking pot 4 or 5 times a week, I wish that I almost never smoked it. And I wish I'd replaced that time spent getting high with exercising. That is what I would tell myself.
I see. And if you were to have done it that way, how do you think it would have affected your life and business? In what way?
I would have gotten more done. I definitely would have gotten more accomplished. And I'd be in better health now. I'm blessed in that I've got really good health. I've got a great body. There's nothing wrong at age 66. There's nothing wrong. But I'd be stronger and I'd be more vital and I'd be more vibrant. But most of all, I would have accomplished more. And I did lose a certain amount of time in my life to sex, drugs, rock and roll, and chasing girls.
Got it. So you were having a good time in the 70s then?
And we're talking 70s and 80s.
80s?
70s and 80s, yeah.
80s, yeah. Yeah,
I started the theater company in 73 and went well into the 80s. And again, I had a great time. I was living in LA. I was a cool dude, Emmy award-winning producer. I had some amount of power and panache. But I wish I had focused more of that energy into things that would have lasted longer than short-term or 1 year, 2 year relationships.
Mm. Yeah. Okay.
I should have married that first girl, honestly. Bonnie Burns, my first girlfriend, she was great. I should have just married her and stayed right in that with her the whole time instead of playing the field.
Gotcha. Playing too much playing in the field.
Yeah.
Would have been easier just to stop while you were ahead, right?
Exactly.
With Bonnie. Well, Bonnie, if you're watching or listening.
Hey, Bonnie, if we're still friends, she probably would be mildly surprised to hear me say that. But when I thought back, I should have just married Bonnie.
This is the first. This may be the first time this is getting out. So making magic first.
That's true.
You guys heard it here. You guys saw it here. It's on the record. So now we talked about the past and Scott's very interesting and colorful and psychedelic past. How about if we were to fast forward to what's going on right now with Scott Katamas? What is something that you have recently made or created?
Well, that's a good question. So when the pandemic happened, now we're going back to March of 2020, I was doing fundraising events and we had a fundraising event planned and all of a sudden masks and social distancing and people are freaking out. And so I said, well, okay, let's just shift it to a Zoom. Let's do it as an online event. And so on Saturday night, April 3rd, 2020, we did a fundraising event for my friend Fantuzzi. And I had some friends of mine that were musicians that came on and played and our friends watched. And people said, wow, that was really cool. And we got nothing else to do on a Saturday night. Why don't you do it again? And I said, well, okay. And my friend Deborah Giusti, who I was partnering with on that, we started doing shows every Saturday night. And the first couple of shows, we just called it, community gathering. Then I came up with the idea of Saturday Night Alive for the Global Peace Tribe, because that's kind of who we are and who we attracted. And our audience started growing. And we started discovering that pretty well-known people had nothing to do on Saturday night. So next thing you know, we're getting Deepak Chopra, Marianne Williamson, Michael Beckwith, a lot of the David Pamalan, Meetin, Jai Utal, Krishna Das, all the kind of celebrities in the new age, new thought field, whom I knew from my years of working with them, and Deborah knew many of them. And so we started getting them to come onto the show, and then the show really took off. And we never intended it to become what it became, but it became where people went on Saturday nights to get their connection to community. And then we started doing fundraising, and it really became a thing. And then, of course, we hit our peak when we discovered Sean Jay.
At your peak, wow. Okay.
And when Sean came onto the show, I mean, you know, there it is. It was great. We had, you know, Sean and other magicians. But you really are our most popular one, I guess.
So. Oh, wow. You guys must have had a very low barrier for entry if I was your peak.
No. We had great magicians. Great. So,
I'm just kidding. You know, I love you, Scott, and I love what you guys do with the Global Peace Drive.
And, you know, and it's interesting because we built something very spontaneously, completely out of need of what was going on in the country at that time. Now, fast forwarding to today, people have zoomed out, and there are 100 things that people can do on Zoom. And it's interesting. So why am I still doing it? Our audience is a fraction of what it was when we peaked. But what did happen was this loyal core group really came together. And I was going to take the summer off and travel. And I got about 150 emails and messages and texts. Scott, please, can you find some way to keep it going? So then I thought, okay, well, I'll show replays. And I've shown a couple. I think over summer, I've shown 2 replays out of 3 shows every weekend. Because then it's like, well, I come up with different ideas and people say, can I be on your show? Can I be on? Why did you do this? So it's morphed into something much smaller and simpler, but I still love doing it. I still love introducing new people to my audience and still old timers. I actually did a pre-record with Reverend Michael Beckwith about 3 hours ago. Because next weekend is all about Peace Week. So I've been going to a lot of our favorite people and asking them to speak about what does peace really look like at a time that war in Europe, who thought there'd be war in Europe, like, right? And it's been interesting to hear what people like Michael Beckwith and Marianne Williamson, a lot of my friends from, you know, who I've known for a long time are having to say about peace at this time in our world.
Mm. Beautiful. So yeah, so we've kind of learned more about what the Global Peace Tribe is, and more specifically, you're actually having a conversation with Reverend Michael Beckwith about peace itself. So it's a great impact that you're having on the globe, which is actually wasn't that your original goal anyway?
Absolutely. But you know, it's up to all of us, Sean. We all have a role to play. It's not up to one Jesus or one Buddha or one religious figure. It's up to each and every one of us to, and that's what Reverend Michael was talking about today, that it's about all of us raising our frequency and really authentically living love, not just talking about love, but, you know, and how do we live love? We see people as beautiful. We see people as good. We stop seeing them as black, white, Republican, Democrat, Trumpster or not, but rather start really raising our vibration through the food we eat, through the thoughts that we have, through the ways that we see each other. That is how we create peace in the world.
Mm, beautiful, beautiful. Now, although it's ideal to have peace 100% of the time, I always ask my guests, being a creative entrepreneur, what was like your biggest DIY fail of all time that you can think of? And funny stories are always welcome. They're preferred, actually.
My biggest fail, wow.
Yeah, where things just kind of blew up in your face.
There's been many. I would say that my biggest fail was back when we were doing educational television shows. And I bought into I trusted people I shouldn't have trusted. And it was my ego that wanted to believe what wasn't realistic. And it definitely set me back pretty far. So again, recognizing that I so wanted to believe in a fantasy that was being laid out for me, that instead of being smarter and grounded and going, I bought into it. And it really was the ego that wanted to believe. Now there's a certain sweetness to that. I mean, I'm the first person up, you know, clapping that I believe in Tinkerbell when I'm at a Peter Pan show. So it's beautiful to believe in Tinkerbell, but as a grown, mature man, it's making business decisions. It's not the best choice.
Right. Business decisions, they have to be rooted in realism most of the time. But then again, I know at the Global Peace Tribe, you talk about what is real and what isn't. And being a magician, I often question reality all the time. But generally speaking, I think you would agree that business decisions, it shouldn't be what you would like it to be. It should be, these are the facts stacked up. Is this going to work for our business or not going to work?
You know, as we go into this conversation, actually, because there is a balance. As a visionary, you're a visionary, right? You have an idea for a magic trick. That's a vision, right?
Sure.
As a visionary, we are here to stretch beyond the mainstream. We are here to stretch beyond what's normal. We are here to go to the edge. And I've always lived on the edge. But sometimes I've fallen off the edge, flat on my face. But I don't want to stop living on the edge, right? I mean, that's our job as visionaries, whether we're an artistic visionary or a toolmaker visionary. We are here to live on the edge. It's just finding that way not to fall off, right?
That is a really good way to describe that. Yeah, dance the edge, dance the dance, but just be careful about falling. And, you know,
and when we do fall and we splat, that's when it's important to have healthy, loving support that'll say, hey, great try, man. Cool, beautiful vision. And have you had that? Have you had where you had an idea for a magic trick and you busted your butt really trying to make it work and you just couldn't, right?
Many times.
Right. And so isn't that where you then need someone who can begin to understand how, you know, they'll never comprehend it, but who can acknowledge how hard you worked, how hard you tried to make that happen. And there's nothing wrong with you that it didn't happen. Stay with the vision. Just on to the next thing, right? How many failures did Einstein have, right? How many failures did any great inventor have? Disney went bankrupt 3 times, right? Three times bankrupt.
Tesla too, right?
Right.
Tesla,
I mean, they drove him out from what I understand, you know. That's another story.
Yeah. No, Tesla went totally, I think they totally tanked out a couple times, but it was Elon's vision and he just didn't care. It's pretty amazing not caring.
That Tesla. We had a generational moment.
Oops.
I'm thinking of Nikola Tesla and you're thinking of Tesla the car, right?
Yep. I'm thinking of Elon in Cali, then moved to Texas.
Yeah.
No, it's all good, but both Teslas had the same problem, I think. It's collective karma. That's what you get for calling your company the same name as the other guy, I think. So, okay.
No, there's our balances, you know, and that's, you know, I mentioned Jane Fonda, and Jane gave me a really great piece of advice. We used to go on hikes because, you know, we were at the camp together and so we'd go on hikes together because she had dogs and I had dogs. So we'd take our dogs on hikes. And I asked Jane, at the time she was doing Jane Fonda aerobics, which was huge. She was a movie star. She was involved in lots of nonprofit organizations, and she was a wife, and she was a mother, and she had her own film production company. So how do you handle all those things? She said, I find three or four people that I trust in each area of my life. And those are the only people I talk to. I don't read reviews. I don't listen to what the critics say. I don't get caught up in fandom. I choose three or four people that are very smart, that really understand that field, and that will be honest with me, that believe in me, that care about me and my family, about, you know, my endeavors, but will be honest with me and that are really smart. And that is great advice for those of us dancing on the edge, to have that support system, to have those people that do love us, that want us to succeed, but will help us when we flop, or help us sometimes to not flop, but it will still encourage us to keep walking the edge.
Yeah, dancing the edge between realism and abstract, and having someone maybe with their hands basically held out. So if you're wobbling a little bit and you're tipping one way, they can, just kick you back over.
Yeah.
So you can regain that balance on that tightrope again. And speaking of balance, you try to have a balanced kind of way that you create things, and perhaps you maybe create things on a schedule. I know a lot of entrepreneurs do that, but has there ever been a time, Scott, where you created something by accident and then it turned out to be wildly successful?
Oh, yeah. Well, as I said before, Global Peace Tribe, I mean, that whole thing was an accident. You know, we were like,
oh, okay.
We were just doing fundraisers on Saturday nights during a lockdown. I don't know if you remember, we thought the lockdown was going to last like 6 weeks.
I think Everybody was like, yeah, this is just a,
So I committed, Deborah, and I said, okay, we'll do this as long as the pandemic is happening. We think in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, we did 90 shows of Saturday Night Alive, 90 shows. And then Deborah, by then, she was burned out. So she needed to go take care of her health, God bless her, and she's doing well.
Good.
Me being the crazy person, because I'd also been doing a show every Friday night and a show every Sunday morning, I just bundled them together into the Awakening World, which I'm still doing. And so that really was an accident that became a success. Absolutely.
Beautiful.
A lot of the times back in the theater days when we were doing those shows, I mean, improvisation, you try things, you know? I mean, you could call it an accident or you could call it an experiment. And, you know, the majority of the experiments don't work, but enough of them do, and you hold on to the ones that work. And that's what's great about playing in front of 500 kids. When you're playing in front of 500 kids, it's very clear whether or not that joke worked. It's very clear whether they're listening or if they're shuffling. There's no doubt. There's no imagining. It's very clear. You know, they're the best audience in the world.
Crystal clear.
They're still clear.
I've talked to people about that. Like, for instance, magicians or performers that perform specifically, not even for high schoolers, but for small children. Oftentimes in my industry, those performers are not as respected as the ones that perform at high-end corporate events, for instance. But I learned very quick, due to me being involved in all of that over the course of my career thus far, as soon as I started and did that, I had a whole new respect for children's performers, because they are a very difficult audience, probably one of the most difficult audiences. Doing that and performing busking as a street performer, that's probably the other most difficult, because same situation, doesn't even have to be kids. It could be a whole bunch of adults. They don't know you're going to be there. They weren't expecting a show of any kind. So you have to be really good, really compelling to grip them in, and they'll tell you right away that basically they'll just walk away because they have no commitment to be there anyway.
Just keep walking. Yeah.
Keep walking.
Yeah, and you're right about kids. They can be brutal. I had a friend, God bless him. He did Happy the Clown, and he would do children's parties until the time that, and he had a bad feeling the moment he walked in the door, because the children were like they were like teenagers, right?
Okay.
And here's Happy the Clown. And then the mother says, okay, you're going to entertain the children while I go get their food.
Mm-hmm.
So Happy the Clown is alone in front of the teenagers trying to do his little things. And one of the kids said, get him! And yeah, Happy the Clown had to run for his life. So I haven't thought of that story in a long time, but it was a good buddy. And that was the end of Happy the Clown.
Happy the Clown became Sad the Clown.
yeah. Time to go into another business. So yeah, kids can be brutal.
And now he's doing like real estate or something, right?
But you know, I'll also say kids can be amazing. You know, we had this camp at James Ranch, and about half the kids were friends of... There were movie star kids, like Angelina Jolie was one of our campers, because John Voight, her dad, was close to Jane. They made movies together. And she also was involved with something called the Campaign for Economic Democracy. So there were a lot of activist parents' kids who came. Mm. But Jane and her genius and her big heart, the other half of the kids that came up were all scholarshiped up from Watts and Compton. So these were street kids. These were, you know, kids who had, most of them had never been out of the hood. And to come on up to this camp where there was horses and swimming pools and hiking and, you know, healthy food. I mean, it was like a whole reality shift. And we did this for 11 years. And the first couple of years, you know, it took a while to learn how to do it. But we learned to have the kids police themselves. And we said, right off, first day, you're going to have a chance to have amazing experiences, and you're going to have a chance to do all these things. But if, and there were certain rules that just could not be broken. And we laid out what the rules were. And we said, we're not going to police you. You're going to police yourselves. And it was really cool to see how even mean motherfucker kids who had terrible things done to them and who had often done terrible things, once they would shift into this kind of rainbow, taking good care of each other reality. And it was beautiful to watch. It was beautiful to see that it was just an image of being a tough guy or a tough chick, and the relief they would feel that image wasn't what was of value at the camp, that what was of value was taking care of each other. And I said policing each other, but really the better thing was taking good care of each other, because everybody had responsibility for everybody else. The older kids were responsible for the younger kids, and everybody had responsibility. And every now and then there'd be one or two kids who just couldn't make the shift. And it was sad. We learned you can't reform them. You send them back down the hill. But the majority of the kids would shift and take good care of each other. And it was a beautiful, beautiful thing to see. So whereas, yes, kids can be brutal, in the right environment with the right support, the best comes out. And they were so relieved that, oh, wow, loving each other up, hugging each other, cuddling each other, being nice to each other, being kind to each other, that's what's of value here, not calling each other names.
Mm. That's really cool, because I'm sure they were expecting to have the finger pointed and be, no, you can't do this, can't do that, can't do that. And that's instantly causes the rebellion mindset, because they go, well, you're not going to tell me, I'm going to show you. And then, but that's nice. You start like this change from the inside out, basically.
Exactly. And say, look, this is we're going to have a great time. And this is what we need for us all to have a really phenomenal, life-changing 13 days together, right?
Love it.
Yeah. But it took us a couple of years to learn that, I got to say. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot to get to that place.
Mm. Change is an inside job.
Yeah, it sure is.
Found that out through the camp. Scott, what resources, because I'm sure you're pretty well read and you've seen a lot of things, like taking us back to the Charlie Chaplin movie, are there any resources that you would recommend Besides, I can't recommend psychedelics on this channel. I'm not Joe Rogan yet. But any resources like maybe online or things that people can read or watch that would put them in a more creative state of mind?
That's a great question. Well, definitely I want to, of course, encourage people to go to our YouTube channel where all of our shows live. And we have amazingly inspirational speakers. You know, people that are really, who talk about the challenges we're facing, climate change, violence, all the issues. And they talk about it with hope and inspiration. I mean, just my interview today with Reverend Michael, it was very, I can't wait for people to see what he has to say because it's very powerful. In terms of the creative part of it, there's a wonderful book called The Artist's Journey. The Artist's Way. These are two separate books, The Artist's Way and The Writer's Journey. So for anybody who's a writer, get The Writer's Journey. It's very much based on Joseph Campbell's work. Joseph Campbell wrote all about the mythology that we grew up with. George Lucas was heavily influenced by Joseph Campbell's writings. And Joseph Campbell wrote about the hero's journey. So the writer's journey takes that idea and applies it to anybody trying to write. And writing anything, a book, a script. So that's highly recommended. And then The Artist's Way is a wonderful book, again, to really tap into the psyche of the creative process, the psyche of our own archetypal imagination as we choose to be creative, as we choose to build.
The Artist's Way and the writer's
journey. Right. What I'll do is when we hang up, I'll find both of those books and I'll send you the links.
Ah, okay. And those links.
And I didn't write either of them and I don't get a royalty. These are just based on my genuine appreciation of great literature that's very practical. Very, very practical.
Excellent, excellent. We got some practical literature. Guys, also check out Scott's YouTube channel for the Global Peace Drive, which is going to be linked right down here, which is, just for the listeners, it is, how do they find it?
Just go to YouTube. Uh-huh. And two things. Go to YouTube and put in Global Peace Drive. That'll take you to our YouTube channel.
Yeah.
Or go to globalpeacetribe.com. And that's where you can register for our shows, learn all about what we're doing. So globalpeacetribe.com is like where you'll find everything, or go to YouTube and put in Global Peace Tribe to go to our YouTube channel. Mm. You know, one other resource, I just interviewed this amazing guy, Sharif Abdullah, and his book is called Practicing Wisdom, and it's brilliant. It's absolutely brilliant. It's right here because I just interviewed him yesterday. So since it's right here and I'm interviewing, you're interviewing me, here's another good tool, Practicing Wisdom by Sharif Abdullah. He has traveled to 85 countries, studied the cultures in all of those countries, and has some really extraordinary understanding of the nature of the human species after studying all these different cultures and seeing what the commonalities are and also what the differences are.
Mm. And the name was Sharif Abdullah?
Sharif Abdullah, and I'll send you that also when
okay, just to make sure that I get the spelling right for all that. So we've got some great book recommendations. We got some things that we can go back in time, travel, and watch to, if we missed out on the Charlie Chaplin stuff, for my younger viewers and listeners, we're gonna learn about that. Millennials need to catch up on the classics for a reason. And wow, I was very inspired and my mind has been expanded thanks to the legend that is Scott Katamas. And wow, Scott, thank you so much for taking the time out of your day to jump on the Making Magic podcast.
My pleasure, Sean. It's fun. It's really fun, actually. Got a chance to think of things I hadn't thought of for a little while. And I love helping people expand their mind without drugs.
There you go. So mind officially blown and expanded. And you guys have been watching and listening to another episode of the Making Magic podcast. I hope you guys like this video, turn on the notifications, be sure to subscribe to the channel for more great, amazing interviews with thought leaders and creative people. The idea is to get the creative gears turning. So I hope you guys enjoyed that, and we'll see you all on the next episode. We'll